Okay, turn to 1 Corinthians 9. 1 Corinthians 9 is what we're going to read. Will is going to read our main verse, 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27. Brian read Philippians 3, 12. Preston, Philippians 2, 21. Where are we at? Chris Lee, 1 Corinthians 9, 27. You got it. He'll help you. 1 Corinthians 9, 27. IL, 1 Corinthians 9, 25. Lem, 1 Corinthians 9, 24. 1 Corinthians 9, 24. And
there you go.
Sean, Colossians 3, 5. A man named Jim Rohn makes a powerful statement. He says, discipline is the bridge between goals and accomplishments. So in other words, the goal, what do you want in life? How do you get there? Between this is where I want to be and actually getting there, he says, the bridge is discipline. And in our scripture, 1 Corinthians, Paul speaks about this, and he talks about the principle of self-discipline, and it really is the bridge. And I want to preach about the bridge. 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27.
You know that in a race, all runners run, but only one wins the prize, don't you? You must run in such a way that you may be victorious. Everyone who enters an athletic contest practices self-control in everything. They do it to win a wreath that withers away, but we run to win a prize that never fades. That is the way I run, with a clear goal in mind. That is the way I fight, not like someone shadow boxing. No, I keep on disciplining my body, making it serve me, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not somehow be disqualified.
Okay, that very good translation. He's talked about self-control and discipline. So this is really the bridge between what you want and getting there is self-discipline. Let's talk about the lack of self-discipline. Paul speaks here about the prize, and this is the goal you are aiming for. This was ancient. There were two main arenas of athletic events. One became the Olympic Games. This was the Isthmian Games, kind of a competitor to that. But this was the highest athletic achievement you could reach. When he talked about a prize for them, it was a laurel wreath. If you ever seen old statues or paintings, they literally would, out of these branches, make something, put it on your head. But it meant a number of powerful things. Number one, it was the glory of, obviously, it'd be like winning a championship or a gold medal, something that was powerful in that way. But there was a great benefit. Whoever got that laurel wreath, you never paid taxes again. So that's not a bad. I got killed on taxes last year, so I'm thinking of taking up running. If only I lived back then. So what Paul is saying is each competitor, they chose their prize. Did they want to be a runner or a boxer, you know, wrestler, whatever event they had. They chose their prize and then they aimed their lives at it. So what he's saying here is that it's not automatic. If you've ever gotten a word from God, if you ever say, I feel called, I believe God has something good, fantastic. That those things are God's intention or what he wants to happen. But Paul is saying that doesn't mean that it's automatic. You're not just automatically going to get there because God plans something good for you. So our prize that we're talking about is something chosen for us by God. Now, if I back up a step, Every man, you could have a prize in your life. Some of you, you want your marriage to be better. Others, you want your finances to be in order. You want to not be struggling paycheck to paycheck. Those are goals. Those are things that you want that may be good. We're talking about the prize, of course, of what God has chosen for us. So God makes plans, even before we're born, something he wants us to do. But in the same way that the athlete said, I know what I want, so therefore I have to make choices to get there, the same is true. If God has chosen something for your life, you have to choose it too and then put actions to get there. Philippians 3:12.
Not that I have already attained or am already perfected, but I press on that I may lay hold of that for which Christ Jesus has also laid hold of me.
Okay, lay hold, the word is grabbed. So Paul's talking about his salvation. He's minding his own devilish business of arresting and persecuting Christians. He said, God grabbed me. It was a surprise. I was grabbed. So he says, God grabbed me for a reason. I want to grab the reason that God grabbed me. So that's a very good picture of plans, and then what do you have to do to get there. So Paul in this verse is actually saying the largest determining factor in whether or not you get to your goal. Is that a better marriage? Is that financial comfort? Things being in order? Is that health? It doesn't matter. We're talking now about spiritual things. Paul says the biggest determining factor is you. It's you. He says, I run, I fight, I discipline. So he says, I have to make choices to reach that. So what keeps men from the prize? Whatever prize it is that you want in life usually is a lack of discipline. Why would you not discipline yourself to get a better marriage, your finances in order, to do the will of God, fruitfulness, achieve your calling? Lack of discipline is the result of self-satisfaction. So that means there are many men, they go, man, you know, I would love God to use my life. I'd love to have a better marriage. I'd love to have my finances in order. The problem is what they want to do now, they want to do what brings fulfillment and gratification in the present. I'd love for God to use my life, but I really would like to sleep in. Man, I would love to have a better marriage, but I just can't be bothered working at conversation with my wife. Being lazy, playing, wasting time. So many men, it's not that they're evil. I have met very few evil people in my life, and I've met, think about how many thousands of people I meet in a year. But generally the reason why men don't get there is because today they want to feel good. Philippians 2:21.
For they all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ.
Okay, they all seek their own interests, not the things of Jesus Christ. I love to do the will of God, but man, sleeping in feels good. I'm tired. I'm gonna lay in. I'm gonna miss prayer. Sleeping in, that feels good today. Playing, you know, whether that's video games or sports or whatever, that's enjoyable today, but it doesn't get you to the goal. That's lack of discipline. Self-satisfaction brings pain, and that is the pain of regret. So if you want to get there, so here's I want to get there, unfortunately, means pain. To get up early when you're dead dog tired is no fun. To exercise when your body is saying, what are you doing? It's no fun. There's many things. Buckling down and working when it's a beautiful day. I could be outside playing. It's no fun. So men are not willing to go through that pain, but they have another... Everybody's going to have pain. You're either going to have the pain of discipline or you're going to have the pain of regret. So a man who says, I'm going to sleep in, I can't be bothered working at conversation with my wife, I can't be bothered working hard at my calling, you're going to have pain. The pain you're going to have is regret. No one escapes pain. The pain is you are trading your calling, your goals. What you're saying is, okay, I'd rather sleep in, I'd rather play, I'd rather feel good today, but that means that I'm not going to get to my goal. I'm going to have less finances, less relational happiness, less fruitfulness in doing the will of God. So it's the pain of regret. This is the problem. As time goes on, there are men, they wake up one day and they realize, I have wasted years not doing the will of God. That's a pain. You could have gone through the pain of discipline. You didn't do that. You're going to have pain, but now you're going to go, I regret wasted years, wasted time. I regret that I can't have a good marriage. I can't have my finances in order. I can't achieve the will of God. One man said, the pain of self-discipline will never be as great as the pain of regret. Talk secondly about the need for self-discipline. Paul says, how do you achieve what your goal is? Whatever it is. He says, self-discipline. 1 Corinthians 9:27.
Well, I discipline my body and I bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself become disqualified.
I discipline my body and bring it into subjection. The word is literally to hit under the eye. It's actually talking about an opponent. Olympic games in those days were brutal. They had no ref going, oh, no, come on, man, you're hurting him. It was many of these events, like wrestling, was to the death. So it is getting your opponent down and pummeling him, causing pain to try to get him to surrender. But Paul says, who am I pummeling? Me. So the simple truth about self-discipline is painful. It's no fun. It's no fun getting up on a cold, dark winter's morning when your bed is saying, it's nice in here. It's no fun trying to eat something healthy instead of junk. It's no fun. And there's a lot of things that are just no fun. Paul says, discipline involves pain. That's just the way it is. So there's the pain of not doing what you feel like doing. This is the options in life. I would rather, there's always something you'd rather do, right? I would rather be playing, relaxing, sleeping in. I'd rather be doing something I enjoy, but anything good takes work. It's painful. That's the way it is. 1 Corinthians 9:25.
All athletes are disciplined in their training. They do it to win a prize that will fade away, but we do it for an eternal prize.
Discipline in their training, and the New King James and King James is everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. So training and temperate are actually the same word. It literally means strength over yourself to contain. So what are you going to contain? I'm going to have strength over myself, whether that's lust, anger, overspending, overeating, eating unhealthy junk, whatever it is, laziness, strength over yourself. And the problem is often many of the things we do are emotional, right? Many of the bad things we do are, emotional. Have you heard the term comfort food? No one has comfort food that is kale chips. Right? So, you ever see this? Is, you know, the joke of women who are sad, so they eat a gallon of ice cream. Right? So there's something we do things when we're emotional. I don't feel like it. Man, it's frustrating which is often the root of addictions like pornography and other things. I'm frustrated, I'm angry, I'm sad, so I give in to, I do what I feel like doing. Discipline means I don't do what I feel like doing. I feel like sleeping in, I get my butt out of bed. I feel like eating junk, I'm trying to eat something a bit healthier. It doesn't matter what it is. Self-discipline means you don't do what you feel like doing. Then there's the pain of doing what you don't feel like doing. So there are things you want to do, no. Then there are things, I don't want to do it. Yes, I will do that in, I can't remember if I gave 1 Corinthians 9:27 a second time. I probably didn't. And so I discipline my body and bring it into subjection. So that's getting out of bed, going to work when you don't feel like it, studying when you feel like playing. There are beautiful days when I would really rather be doing something outside and having fun, but I have work to do. So I am chained to my desk, working my butt off when there's a lot nicer places that I could be, or when I feel like relaxing. So discipline is how you get to your prize. What do you want? Jim Rohn, discipline is the bridge. I'm here, I want to get there. How do you get there? Discipline. Former Navy SEAL Jocko Willink, he suggests that discipline is freedom. What he means by that is by setting strict routines, keeping a tight schedule, and maintaining self-control, leaders avoid the distractions, procrastination, and disarray that undermine success. So if you discipline yourself, you actually free yourself. So there are men here that your finances, what are you going to do with your paycheck next week? It's not up to you. It's already determined by somebody else. There are, you know, health issues that are determined because you've not taken care of yourself. There's a lot of things. Discipline brings freedom to be what God wants you to be. That's the point. Discipline, self-discipline is the bridge. Final thought, the power of self-discipline. Listen, self-discipline is possible. I am aware while I am teaching this so far, some of you are sitting there thinking, I am doomed. Doomed. I can't do that. It's not possible. God is not cruel. He would never put something in the Bible that is impossible for you. Okay? He's not like, I told them to discipline themselves, telling Gabriel, there's no way that guy can ever do it. Yes, you can. So, discipline means you have to decide what you want. 1 Corinthians 9:24.
Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it.
The prize. So what is your prize? Again, do you want your marriage to be better? It only takes a few small steps to improve a marriage. Is it your finances? You want your finances to be in a place, I'm not talking about being a multimillionaire by Tuesday, but just in a place where you have a bit of freedom? And is it, of course, is a discipleship setting, the will of God, to do God's will in your life? You have to decide what you want. That is first and foremost. Never wander through life. What's going to happen tomorrow? I don't know. We'll just see what happens. You got to make up your mind. When I was 16 years old, God, to my surprise, called me to preach, but the moment I knew what I was supposed to do in life, that changed everything. As I say, I have never gone back to hot rods again. I got back to America, sold my car, my broken 69 GTO. I've never gone back again because I knew what I wanted. This is what I had friends when we got together, we talked about the will of God, preaching. Someday we talked. That's what I wanted. You got to decide what you want. And there is a power in that. There's a power. I think I've done this in other lessons, but make up your mind what you want in life. Write it down. You know, Habakkuk says that he may run who reads it. Write the vision and make it plain. Write it down. What is it you want in life? Write down a few simple goals. You don't need 59 of them. A couple of simple goals in life. Write them down so that you can refer to them. Decide what you want. Number two, ask God for help. So some of you, your struggle in all of your life has been a lack of discipline. So ask God for help. Tell God. He already knows it, but he wants you to say it. It's like Jacob, what is your name? Schemer, okay? What's your name? Lazy. That's what you need to tell God. I need help. I don't currently have the strength to do what I need to do because God loves you. He will help you. Number three, you have to confront your lack of self-discipline. You got to judge it. Don't excuse it. Right? The problem with people is they always excuse, whether that is, you don't know the way I was raised, that's why I'm rude to people, or, there's so many people normally make excuses. I have people who are, overweight who are telling me that it's genetic while they have, a handful of donuts, and somehow it's not fair. You got to judge it. You got to call it for what it is. Colossians 3:5.
So put all evil things out of your life. Sexual sinning, doing evil, letting evil thoughts control you. Wanting things that are evil and greed. This is really serving a false god.
Okay, so in New King James, it would say put to death. Put it to death. Don't excuse it. Don't say, you don't know my wife. You don't know my situation. Put it to death. There are things in my life that has to die. I don't want them in my life anymore. Fourth thing I suggest to you, start small. Biggest mistake that guys make when they realize a lack of discipline is they set wildly unrealistic goals. Like I say, if you have not been a consistent Bible reader, and God convicts you, I'm going to read my Bible every day. Don't name an outrageous number. Don't say, I'm going to read 50 chapters a day. You're not. That's unrealistic. And then the problem is, you'll sleep in tomorrow and you'll miss it. So now you'll wake up the next day going, I owe God 100 chapters. And then you're depressed and you'll stop altogether. That's not realistic. That's why people are like, I don't know, I've never... One chapter a day. You can always go up. Right? You're going to pray. How about 10 minutes? You can always go up later on. Better to start small, making small decisions that are attainable. And so you can always increase. Listen to this. Experts say that when you do a specific thing repeatedly for 21 consecutive days, it has a great chance of becoming a lifetime habit. If you'll do anything every day for 21 days, you are well on the way to achieving that. During COVID, obviously had a lot of time in my hands. I started hiking the Constellation Trail. I had time. I did it every day. I felt good. It was great. Then, of course, it gets cold and winter. Wasn't able to do that. So then the next year, I'm going to get back to it. And then we had allergy season. I could barely breathe that year. I don't normally have allergies. My eyes were bothering me. Then we had the fires for 5 weeks. So bottom line, I never got back to it. And so I was like, man, I need to exercise. But just the thought of it and my schedule and all that. So I made up my mind when I was in Argentina in April, first week of April. I have to start exercising some every day. With my schedule, it's not possible for me to hike trails every day. I need to do something. So I started, that would be April 4th or something like that. And since then, every day, small amounts for me, what I need is I just need to get my heart beating and I need to breathe hard for a few minutes. So I started that April 4th. I have done it every single day since then. Except one day, I think last Thursday or whatever, I slept in and wasn't able in a crazy day. So my point is, doing it small and doing it daily, I have a good chance that that will continue. So that's a something simple. In early days, people often ask me about my schedule. Where I travel, people are fascinated. What is your schedule? What do you do in the day? And I explain to them, and how do you get all this done? How do you do sermons and run things and write books and all that? And I say, I get up early. I didn't used to get up early. As a young disciple, I wanted to do the will of God, but I struggled to get out of bed in the morning. Now, of course, I was dumb as rocks. I was staying up until 1 and 2 in the morning. It's very hard to get up at 5 if you just went to bed at 2, right? So it never occurred to me in that way. But I started going to bed a bit earlier, and I started getting up. The thing about self-discipline is that can become a habit. When I first was getting up, it's like, I'm dying. This is killing me. Now, I cannot sleep in. I drive my wife crazy. We go on vacation. She's like, sleep in. I cannot. My body, you know, I never use an alarm except for when I travel to make sure I don't miss a plane or whatever. I don't need an alarm. My body, bing, I wake up every morning, 4:30 is latest. Every morning, because it's become a habit. I've disciplined myself to where it's automatic. It's no longer, I can't get out of bed. It just happens. That's what you want to happen in self-discipline. It's unnatural for me to not read my Bible every day. As I said, when I had surgery on my eyes, 2 weeks I couldn't read my Bible. I was dying because it's a habit. Self-discipline is the bridge. So, the thing about self-discipline, any pain that is involved in self-discipline brings joy later on. Remember, if you don't have discipline, you're going to have pain. It's regret. I wish I had. I wasted time. If you go through the pain of self-discipline, it brings joy later on. You like how you feel. Anybody who eats a little bit healthier, and I'm not talking about being a vegan or, you know, living on kale chips, but if you'll eat a little bit better, if you'll get a little bit of exercise, you will feel better. That is the bottom line. But that's spiritually true. Men who read their Bible consistently every day, come to prayer every day, they feel better. They feel better about life. They feel better about themselves. And then you can see the benefits and the results. Spend time working on your relationship with your wife. It will pay off benefits. It's not an unattainable goal. And then, of course, you know that God is pleased because God is a God of discipline. He loves that we have discipline. So it's really true that this is the bridge. Self-discipline is the bridge. Okay, let's open for questions. Something you want to ask about this.
When you're trying to like schedule like your day with time and stuff, what is the best way to do it? Not to feel like you're putting too much into one thing versus the other.
Well, it's just balance. So, the priority of my life is reading my Bible, okay, and praying. So I have to. Every day, number one, that's the advantage for me of coming to starting my day in coming to prayer. So if I start my day in relationship with God, that to me is the bedrock of my life. Other things can change during the day. You know, you have to appreciate with my job, one phone call can dramatically change my day. But so I start with, I absolutely have to have my relationship with God. That is foundational and that can never change. I cannot say, I was busy today, I didn't have time to pray. That can't happen, never. And it can never be that I was busy, I don't have time to read my Bible. So I have to structure my day in such a way that I have time for those two things. Once you do that, then of course, by getting up early, I'm able to get in exercise. For me, it's a dramatic difference. 4 minutes of exercise, I go on a treadmill and go hard with weights for 4 minutes, so I breathe hard. So it's not a time commitment. I'm never going to be a gym guy, right? You're never going to come and say, Pastor Greg, you're looking buff. That's not the goal. So those things I can fit in every day, right? Apart from that, it is a matter of there are certain days when I have to do certain things. So I have to schedule in early in the morning. People know they can get a hold of me from overseas, so I take calls. I answer emails first thing in the morning that have come in the night, things I have to respond to, financial decisions, missionaries need, various things. And then it is a matter of coming here. It's a priority. When I'm home, my priority is discipleship. That's why I come to breakfast almost every day when I'm here, if I can, and because that's a priority. And then it's studying. So that can depend on, I work in advance. I'm working in advance. I think, how many more lessons do you have in your series?
Two.
So he has two more, and then I have a special that we're going to do. So I know that I have 3 weeks until I start Sunday school. I've been working on it for the last week and a half, 2 weeks. I've been working on lessons ahead. That's planning. Sermons I have mapped out. So it's just a matter of what I have going, Ben, that I try to map out in. I plan in advance. I work out in 2 to 3 month blocks my sermon needs so that I can work in advance. The idea is that I want to be able to work a bit rather than it's 3 o'clock on a Wednesday and I need a sermon in 2 hours, right? So by planning will save you a lot of problems in life. And then you just have to have, you have to have room for things that change. So I'm not so set in my ways that I'm depressed if my day changed. So yeah. Planning is the key.
What time do you go to bed?
I go to bed at 10. You can't get up at 4:30 if you stay up late. So 10 o'clock to me is. And sometimes, if you do that, if I'm going like crazy. Last night I went to bed at 9:30. And occasionally I'll go to bed at 9 if it's a catch-up. I've been traveling, whatever. But 10, 10, that means I'm getting to sleep by 10 to 10:30. And my body functions okay with 6 hours of sleep is sufficient for me. Yeah. Somebody else? Thinking about it. Yep.
You mentioned that sometimes you can make outlandish expectations of yourself and they're not realistic, so you get depressed, you just give up.
Yep.
Is there something too, though, maybe when you're starting a new habit, it's frustrating, it's hard, you want to give up, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Like you gotta just keep pushing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. You gotta push through pain.
Yeah.
To where, I am told that with exercise there comes a point where it's enjoyable. I haven't seen that yet, but I keep hoping. I hope that one day, like, wow, this is fantastic. To me, it sucks, but it's got to be done. So, but again, for me, I can afford 4 minutes. So, and that's what I need. I just need to get my heart and lungs going hard. So, yes, it is. Yes, it is difficult, but it's an attainable pain. Whereas if I'm unrealistic, if I'm going to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger by Tuesday, that's just not going to work, right? Yeah, the only God that I'm going to look like is Buddha, apparently. Somebody else. Chris?
So that 21 days, would that work in the reverse about breaking old habits?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And any new habit you're starting is journey breaking an old habit, right? Yes. Yep, so 21 days, I think that's an attainable goal in life if you start small, yes. So whatever bad habit, if I stop that's true for everything in life, Chris. That's true in, then we get into science, is that they say that the ways that you think and the things that you do and the things you expose yourself in your brain forms ruts, right? Neural grooves. So this is true that your body expects certain things. Your brain expects certain things because your brain has run a rut. So this is true. Pornography, if men will stop pornography for 21 days, the ruts are going away. Their brain naturally is going that way. It's true for any bad habit, yes. So it works. But normally you're not just I'm stopping everything bad. You're normally replacing it with something good, right? Mm-hmm. So yes, they go hand in hand, absolutely, yes. So that's the hope. That's the hope. So we're not talking about forever and ever. That's too difficult a concept. For the rest of my life is too difficult. 21 days. Can you do this for 21 days? That would be that would change things for you.
So I was wondering how you found time to write a book, and in particular, I'm thinking it's kind of one of those things that you have all these other things that come up, and it's so easy to push that off. It's as important as these other things. Do you just take a time and you say this is going to be my time to work on the book, or how do you do?
Yes, you know, one of the things that I'm very grateful to God for, Robert, is that when I work, when I type, I could type in the middle of a hurricane, no problem. I type on airplanes. I can type around screaming babies. I can type. I drive in the car with my wife. There can be music playing. I tune it out, and I can work anywhere. It makes no difference to me. Guys at conferences, they marvel. When I go to preach in a conference, I'm not there as a visiting. I'm not there to get fed. So when I'm there, I'm working away. There's sermon, they're laughing, they're clapping, they're praising God, and I'm working away. So in that sense, I'm grateful to God. But it just has to be done. I have to work at it, and then part of my personality is when I start something, I want to finish it. I can't stand to have something unfinished. That drives me crazy. So it's attainable, right? Writing the book, 16 chapters, is when I reach chapter 8 is like I'm in the home stretch, baby. I'm gonna work at it. So, but that's a key is working. I've started Memorial Stone. So, but that means that I have time to work on it in advance, so that we have time to work on it. And so it's just a bit every day. But then on the other hand, I mean, come on, I'm not writing War and Peace, right? So I'm not writing a 9-volume set. So that's the other thing.
Do you think, going back to talking about grooves in the brain, breaking old habits, do you think there's healing associated with that? Like,
absolutely.
Help?
Oh, absolutely. That, what I'm saying is, in the first place, it's natural. So in the first place, anything you stop doing, the grooves will change. Anything you stop thinking, anything you stop looking at, in the natural sense, it will. But then we have God. That's a prayer to God. God, I lack self-discipline. I don't possess that in myself. I need help, is a prayer he absolutely would answer. So it's true in the natural, but now we're adding something supernatural. There's God's grace, yes, absolutely. Because God is, again, God is not cruel. He doesn't want to leave any man the way he is if it's not good, with no hope. Right? Because otherwise, scriptures like we read are just a torment. Like, why'd you put that in there? I'm a worm. I can't go on. So yes, cry out to God for a miracle. It will add to what is already natural. Yeah. Good.
I guess as it relates to this, do you feel like it's better to add in deadlines and rather than have open-ended goals, like I want to finish a book by this time, rather so you're operating under pressure and
it's a personality thing. For me, pressure is my friend. I work very well under pressure. So if I have all the time in the world to work on sermons, that's not as good for me. Sometimes I have deadlines. Like, you know, Jesse knows that there are times where I'm coming up to where I have to have, I have to have 5 new sermons by next week for a conference coming up. I can do it. Pressure doesn't, some people, pressure freaks them out. It's like, oh my God, I'm under, but for me, it focuses my mind. Things come clear when I'm under discipline, but that's my personality. That's not true for everybody else. I think for most people, deadlines, for someone who lacks self-discipline, I think that deadlines probably would not work well for you, because then they become depressing. I'm going to get this done by Tuesday, and when I don't, I go, now I feel bad. It's already hard. There's the pain that Matt said, this is no fun, but now I'm depressed at myself. I'm angry at myself because I didn't get the goal done. And there may be other factors, right? You know, I want to get it done, but then you had the flu for 2 weeks. So that's not, you got to be realistic. Now, there may be people that, yes, it may help, you know, as far as uprooting rejection. What helped me was I wanted to have it done by Tucson Conference. All versions, everything done by Tucson Conference. So that gave me a goal. I need to crank this out because I have to give time for interpretation, video, translation. Poor Stephen, I've been working like a slave driver to try to get it done. So it just depends. So in the normal, if you lack discipline totally, I don't think deadlines are your friend. But there may be people that your personality may help you. Only if it can be completed by such a time. But in discipleship, there are many things that can't be completed, but it'll be a lifelong goal. It'll be a lifelong issue. So for that case, I just need to do something every day, right? So I don't know what would be the goals in your life. Stephen?
So self-discipline by nature, it's a very personal thing. The question is, how should a disciple, a man of God, approach accountability? Because I know sometimes in discipleship, it's seeing other men rise. You want to be accountable to them. Is there a place for that, or is this more just a personal focus? Should men be going out of their way to have an accountability partner or somebody they can be accountable to?
I think that's a personal choice. It may be valid in certain things, like, you know, there are things in things that are very destructive, you know, pornography, it may be helpful to have an accountability partner, yes. But just in general, I don't need to call Jesse and go, Jesse, I prayed today. So I that's very personal. And then there may be just, there are things that are private, and that's okay. So I don't know. I know there are guys, they think accountability is the key to everything, but, you know, I don't know. You're often on your own. That whole idea of pastoring is you're going off by yourself. So a lot of things need to be done by yourself because no one will see you when you're out. Who are you going to be accountable to?
Right.
So you got to develop it yourself in some ways. That's how I feel. Daniel?
The outside of the church world, they talk about developing mental toughness by seeking out things that you don't want to do. Like, example, like do a cold shower in the morning or something. But spiritually, is there a certain element that if you feel like your flesh doesn't want to do something, reading the Bible in a certain way or studying a certain way, that, okay, if I don't like this, maybe I need to do it in something good. You seek those, try to find things like that?
You can. I mean, as far as seeking, like, what can I possibly do? I think everybody has basic things that you need to do as a Christian, that I don't wake up every morning like, I get to read my Bible, right? And sometimes this is stinking hard work. I read for a couple of days, and sometimes like, what did I just read? It wasn't like anything was leaping out at me, but then there are days that I do. I go for days, it's like, oh man, that was fantastic. So, you know, yeah, you can, you know, you can seek out difficult things. I think everybody needs to have the discipline of daily Bible reading and prayer. That's foundational. I don't think you're going to get any other discipline if you don't get that discipline correct. So then you can work on other hard. It's my priority in life. If I have gotten up in the morning and I have read my Bible or the bulk of my Bible reading, I read more than others because I'm a full-time pastor, but if I've done the bulk of my Bible reading or all of it by the time I come to prayer and then I pray, I'm in a very good position for the day. whatever comes. So what I don't want is I don't want to already feel like I'm a lazy slug and far from God, and now there's a crisis, right? If you have a crisis in your life and you come to me for help, don't you want me to be as close to God as possible? Right? You don't want me to be carnal and, you know, all I've done for the last 6 weeks is play video games. It's like, oh, I don't know what we should do. Right? So it's foundational. Build your daily relationship with God. Everything flows. That's the absolute priority of my life. And everything then flows out from that. Yeah.
That's okay.
Yep.
Did you, you said you're not affected by distractions. Is that like a natural thing or something you prayed and asked God to...
I don't remember asking God for it. I think part of it is just equipping. God knows how busy I am, so he helps me. So yeah, I don't know. But it would be something, yeah, if I didn't have it, I could certainly pray for that. You know, I know there are guys, they gotta have beautiful music and mood lighting and different. I just can't, right? I've been on an airplane, there's a screaming baby, so it's just not gonna work. So yeah, it'd be something you could definitely ask God for, sure. I think whatever you need, you can ask God for.
In the past, it seemed coming up with BHAGs, like, and these goals was very easy because I did whatever I wanted. Like, what huge goal was I gonna, anything.
Yeah.
Should it be challenging when you are underneath the will of God and underneath other people's ministry as well? Like, to say, like, I'm going to do this, sometimes I don't really know exactly, like, how to just pick big goals, right? And so it's not that I'm not driven for those, but sometimes I'm like, man, how do I choose? When do I choose? And is it all of, you know, when do you determine those things? How do you say, this is going to be a priority, I'm going to obtain this?
I think, Matt, the problem in many things in the will of God, in spiritual things, there's no app for it. I can't measure it. So I have a goal. I want to be a better preacher by next year than I am today. I want to grow in that. But how do I measure that? Right? There's no graph. That sermon was, you know, 6.7% better than last week. I can't determine that. I want more in fruitfulness. There are things that I want. I want to get there, but they are small steps. Many things in the kingdom of God are small steps. You're taking things that are from the financial world, the business world, and they try to apply them spiritually, right? So in the business world, we're going to have 50% better sales next year. That's totally measurable. You can put it in and go, nope, we're only at 37. Spiritual things, you know, do you know what percentage better you're doing this year spiritually than you were last year? So they're trying to apply it, and I get it. You know, it's better than being a slug and I want nothing in life, but it's not exactly. Part of the problem is they have run the church world and Christian books. They try to apply business principles that it doesn't all apply. So I don't know.
Okay. So I guess I'm just thinking now, would it make sense for me to come up with, or I have goals and I have things, I'm like, I would really like to do this, but I don't know if it fits, or I don't know if this is what I should be pursuing. Would it just make sense to bring them to your pastor Jesse and say, these are some of the things that I want. You tell me which ones are, you think are priority or would fit or would make sense.
I guess, but then a lot of life is personal, so.
Yeah.
You know,
I understand personal goals, but I mean more ministry goals. Like, okay.
Yeah. So, but that's, fortunately we have avenues for, you can ask questions, right?
Yeah.
That's the beauty. We have multiple times a week we can ask and get direction. Good.
So you mentioned, you said when you discipline yourself, you become free. Is that like, can that happen like certain family members or even yourself or myself? You know, I do certain things because of the way I was raised or the things I saw growing up. Are those things that statement there, is that like things that can be broken as you discipline yourself, curses from the past that have carried on through generations?
Absolutely. The The thing about discipleship, it's true for all salvation, but the truth about discipleship is there has to be self-examination. So it's I can't look at you and say, Ben, you know what's in your past that's hurting you? Because I don't know. That's for you to determine. And you know, obviously over time I get a sense, a guy who never comes to prayer, probably he's lazy. There are things that you smile, I would have no idea what's going on inside. It's for you to determine. That's why discipleship it's not Bible school. Bible school, it's this number of hours, this number of credits, this number of classes, you qualify. You're done. You got it for life. Discipleship isn't like that. Discipleship is, Peter, you know what? You need to shut your mouth. You're filled with pride. Another guy, it's Bartholomew, you need some faith here. You know, Thomas, you need to believe. It's very personal. Everything is personal. One guy, what he's struggling with is the biggest thing in the world. To another guy, is like, what? So in one sense, you have to be honest with yourself. What are the areas that I have struggled with? You're the one that should determine that. Now, we can be blinded, of course, but the good thing, this is why God has designed the church. If you're blinded about yourself, God has designed relationships to reveal. I am a wonderful, kind human being, but my wife wants to kill me. Apparently, I'm not a wonderful, kind human being. Right? I am humble and filled with love, but everybody I'm in ministry with are mad at me. I must not be, right? So it's balance. So part of it is just personal. I see it. Where have I struggled in the past? What are the areas that I'm not doing well at right now? That's for me to determine. And then my blind spots in the mercy of God, God will cause preaching, relationships, pastors, all that to bring other things, hidden things to the surface. So yes, part of that is from the past. You can't think and react from like you did in the past. Yes. So that's all part of discipline, yes. Good. Very good. Good questions, guys.